Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today, we have two special guests from Tavira, Portugal, Randy Wilcox and Richard Costable. I'll tell you a little bit about each of them. Randy holds a degree in secondary education from Heidelberg University and an MLS degree from Kent State University. In his career as a professional law librarian, he worked in positions in academic, law firm, and corporate law libraries. Born and raised in Ohio, he moved to the East Coast with his now husband in 1997. Retired since January 2014, he served as vice president and president of the Community Beach Association on the Jersey Shore, where he and his husband lived until they left the U.S. for Portugal last August 30th. Oh, I remember the Jersey Shore days. Randy's husband, Richard, whom he met in Cleveland in 1992, is a retired professional stage manager whose career took him to numerous regional theaters and also to Broadway. The couple shares a love of live theater, cooking, fixing up their new home, travel, and are especially excited to now be living in Europe where travel is easy and inexpensive. Richard Costable was born in the Bronx and over the years lived in four of the five boroughs of New York City. Did you live in Brooklyn?
I did.
Oh, wow. We'll talk about that too. He graduated from Regis High School in Manhattan, Fordham College in the Bronx, and the Neighborhood Playhouse School of the Theater in Manhattan. His careers have included delivery boy for the New York Post, record salesman for the Spinning Disc, math tutor, math teacher for Up With People High School, computer programmer, systems analyst for IBM in Westchester, New York, freelance actor, freelance stage manager for 38 years, that's pretty impressive, and teaching stage management at SUNY Purchase at Rutgers University. He's most proud of his 17-year association with Hal Holbrook's Mark Twain Tonight. In the course of his career, he worked on plays and musicals on Broadway, touring shows off-Broadway, in regional theaters all over the country, Lord of the Rings in concert, and many other live events and celebrations. He even ran away with the Big Apple Circus for two summers. He has served on the board of directors of stage managers associations, including president for 6 years and Normandy Court Condominium Association in Normandy Beach, New Jersey, president for 6 years. Currently, he is co-secretary of the newly established Stage Managers Association Foundation, which aims to underwrite education, training, and scholarships that enhance and develop stage management skills for students and professionals working in the business, as well as projects meant to contribute to the understanding of the stage manager's role. Rich retired in September 2017, very shortly after Mr. Holbrooks announced his own retirement at the age of 92. He and his husband, Randy, have been travelers, spending as much time on the road as possible, though Rich's jobs, as well as on independent adventures. They did much research, including a three-month scouting trip before they relocated full-time to the Algarve in Portugal at the end of August 2022. Their good fortune in making new lives later in life than most dare to do is they've been nothing short of miraculous. A new home, a new car, and many new friends, nearly all of whom are expats from various English-speaking countries. But he's determined to break the back of learning the Portuguese language, and he has gotten to the point where his pronunciation is so good that the responses come back at about 360 words a second in Portuguese. Well, that's some bio. So welcome, gentlemen, to the podcast. We're going to talk today about Tavira, Portugal. I'm really interested in learning what Tavira is all about, what the Algarve is all about. And again, welcome. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Glad to be here.
Sure. So, guys, tell the audience where you moved from and why you chose to live in Tavira. Which cities did you visit before you decided on Tavira?
We had lived in Normandy Beach, New Jersey, on a barrier island off the central coast since 2014 when I retired. We had a second home there starting in 1999, and that became our primary residence once I retired from Xerox. We, over the years, had been considering relocating. Rich has Italian ancestry, and we thought perhaps we could move to Italy, but because of his age, his birthday falling within, 6 months?
6 months, yeah.
Too late. He was not able to apply for citizenship through his grandparents.
Right. They changed the law 6 months after I was born. God. And if it had been before then, I could have used my mother's mother, who was fully Italian, as for a descendancy passport, I guess they call it.
So yeah, you could have gotten an EU citizenship through that.
Right.
And you were only 6 months away.
Right. Wow, that's, right. Timing.
Yeah, that's pretty sad.
We were very uncomfortable with mostly the political situation in the U.S. basically since the year 2000. And the gun culture is just getting out of hand. We don't see any way that it's going to improve. So we started looking pretty extensively. Well, we looked at Belize, we looked at New Zealand, we looked at
other European countries.
And when we first came to Portugal in the fall of 2019, we visited Porto and took a river cruise across the Douro River to Spain and then back to Porto and down the west coast to Coimbra and Lisboa, Sintra, and then spent 5 nights in the Algarve, driving from west to east, exploring a new town every day, practically. I just fell in love with the golden sand, the sun, the friendly people, the beautiful little towns, and we're beach people coming from the Jersey Shore. So we pretty much at that point decided, this is where we could possibly retire. So in the spring of 2022, we packed our bags and spent 3 months just in the Algarve. We started spending a month in Burgao, which is in the west, a small fishing village near Lagos. And then the second month we spent in Santa Lucia, a small fishing village southwest of Tavira. And then the month of May we spent in Matarota, a small fishing village between Tavira and the Spanish border. And we had easy access to Tavira from the last two towns. So we did spend a lot of time in Tavira during those 2 months and got to know the area, met some great folks and who have now become really good friends. And I just felt very comfortable, very safe. The people are friendly and the beaches are beautiful. So after 3 months, decided, yes, let's do this. So we went home and started the application process for our visas.
So I'm picturing it. I'm trying to picture it as a kind of a Jersey Shore town where you have access to the beach. It's beautiful beaches as opposed to a city.
It's not quite the same because around the central part of the Algarve, central, east, and west, there are barrier islands in New Jersey. However, here the barrier islands are not developed at all. So in order to get to the beaches in this part of the Algarve, you actually have to take either a ferry or you could kayak or canoe. It's a very small river you have to cross. But in Matarota, which is the more easterly place that we stayed the last month of our stay in the spring, you can just walk from the door of the place we were staying right onto the beach. There's no barrier island in the middle. So it's a certain difference, but the bottom line is the beaches are there and they're easy to get to, and we love it.
What made you decide Portugal as opposed to the other countries? Did you look at it, like, did you look at cost of living and taxes and what Portugal offered as compared to other countries?
Yes, we did quite a bit of research. We had subscribed to International Living magazine, and they had many articles on Portugal over the years. We also were looking for somewhere not religious. For instance, we thought Italy was probably too religious. Portugal is very Catholic, but not many people go to church. And it's, you know, live and let live society, basically. They approved same-sex marriage in 2010. That was an important criteria. Other things we looked at were the healthcare system, the tax situation.
Cost of living.
Cost of living.
Climate.
Climate.
Yep, we're going to go over all of that stuff too. So I'm trying to picture also, geographically speaking, where is Tavira located and where within Tavira the beaches, or is there like a center of town? Is there a town that you can actually do shopping and get all your groceries and stuff like that?
Yes, Tavira is located about 40 kilometers from the border with Spain. So it's in the very eastern Algarve. It's less touristy than cities in the western Algarve and central, actually, also. Faro is the closest large city, and it's about 30 kilometers to the west of us. Faro has an international airport, which was another thing we were very interested in having close by. And yes, there is a central downtown area right on the river that runs through central Tavira. There's an old Roman bridge right there in the center of town. The beaches itself are probably another kilometer from the center of town via ferry, but the ferry dock is right there in the center of town. And the fare on the ferries is very inexpensive.
It's like a euro and a half. Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful town. And that's one of the reasons why we decided on Tavira over others. It's got activities all year round promoted by the township, the city, the village, you know, the community. And it's kept very clean. It's very walkable. We're about probably a kilometer and a half from the center of town, which is, you know, like a half hour walk. And there's just an amazing abundance of restaurants, shops, very scenic areas to visit, not to mention the beaches. And again, the folks who have become our very best friends are just like half a kilometer down the road. Mm-hmm. And that helps an awful lot as well.
So you said you have to take a ferry to the beach, right?
Right.
Yeah. So how long does that take?
10 minutes, I would think.
10 minutes. So it's shorter than like a Fire Island ferry. To Fire Island.
It's a very narrow waterway. It's part of the Rio Formosa, which is a national park.
Sounds beautiful.
It is.
And as far as shopping, there's a shopping mall, again, within walking distance of us, a large grocery store and home stores and shoe stores and Vodafone and Mayo, the
pharmacy. You know,
the cable company, all that.
So pretty much everything at your disposal?
Yeah.
Okay.
And there are three other major supermarkets on the outskirts of the downtown area with all of this.
So is Tavira walkable? Is it a walkable town?
Oh, yes, very walkable.
There
are some hills, but it's not as hilly or steep as Lisbon, for instance. And cobblestone streets, very narrow in places, and parking can sometimes be a challenge in the downtown area, but there's plenty of parking on the outskirts and a, you know, 10-minute walk. So,
do you need a car?
I would say yes, but that's just us because we like to shop in other places. You know, there's a huge mall on the other side of Faro that has an IKEA, and Leroy Merlin, which is the Portuguese equivalent of Home Depot or Lowe's. We spend a lot of time there, time and money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And we find that along our friends down the road said that they frequently their car just sits there idle for days at a time. And we find the same thing with us.
I bet.
It's there when we need it, but we really love walking. And Tavira is eminently walkable, no question about it. It's a beautiful place to walk around and very friendly. And I mean, even on New Year's Eve, when there were, you know, quite a collection of people down by the river to watch the fireworks, it just felt very comfortable and very safe and very friendly. And that's what we were starting to miss where we were living. There's a lot of lack of civility and a lot of lack of respect all over. And money speaks in the U.S. And here, I don't think people care, you know, how much you got in your bank account or your investments.
If right, that's not person. Important.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like meeting somebody at a party. You know, people yeah. here in the U.S. will say, oh, what do you do? Right. And probably people in Europe, they couldn't care less what you do.
Correct. Okay. Mostly in our group, it's what did you do?
Right. That's a definitely good thing. What did you do? Yeah. You remember those good old days back in the yeah. U.S. when everybody was like they are now in Europe. But
right.
Tell us about the climate. What are the summers like? Is it hot and humid? Does it have a monsoon season, rainy season? What are the winters like? Because I know the weather in Portugal can vary from the north to the south, and you're in the Algarve, which is the south. So it's quite different than Porto.
Yes.
Or Lisbon.
Correct.
So elaborate on that.
In the Algarve, there are 300 days of sunshine a year. Temperatures are very warm compared to the rest of Portugal, and I think a bit drier than the central and northern parts of Portugal. They've been getting a lot of rain lately. Both Porto and Lisbon have had some flooding issues over the past month because of all the rain they've been getting. We got probably a week of heavy rain in early December. That happened to be the week that Rich and I were in London, so we missed all the major downpours. And since we've returned in mid-December, we've had spotty showers, but temperatures in December and January so far have been in the low to mid-60s during the day and 50s at night.
At night, I could deal with that. And so that's winter averages.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes, that's now. And, you know, one of the considerations when we did all the research into every place that we were considering, but especially the Algarve, is that the whole Iberian Peninsula for the past few years has had way below average rain over the course right. of the year. And there was pretty severe drought. The reservoirs were pretty low. And of course, that's a major concern. And the rains this winter, this rainy season, December and January, have really helped immensely. But of course, the future depends on the weather patterns doing what they've done historically, which is in the winter replenish, and in the spring, summer, and fall, you know, the water gets used, and then you hope again that the winter comes around and replenishes.
Right. Yep. And you're on the Atlantic, right?
Yes.
As yep. opposed to the Mediterranean.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah, that was one of the early things we found out. We thought, okay, the Atlantic's on the west coast of Portugal, and the Mediterranean's on the south. And I don't forget what prompted it, but we looked at the map and said, oh, no, the Mediterranean doesn't start to really go through the Straits of Gibraltar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and how hot does it get in the summer? Is summer really, really hot and humid?
It gets warm. It's our friends, we have yet to spend the summer here in Tavira, but friends reported that it was in the 90s several days last August. But it is not as extreme as inland areas. Last May, we met friends in Seville for a long weekend. And in May, it was upper 90s in Spain. But here in the Algarve, the ocean breezes kept it very comfortable. So
Yeah, Seville is definitely one of the hotter places.
Yes.
In that area, I think it's the hottest, at least in Spain or on the Iberian Peninsula. Okay, so I can deal with over 300 days of sunshine and and 60 degree highs in the winter and 50 is the lows. I can definitely deal with that.
No snow.
No snow. That's one thing I said, even now I'm living in Phoenix.
And right.
I don't want to, you know, when I moved away from New York, I was like, I don't want to see snow ever again. Only in pictures on Facebook. That's it.
Well, we haven't skied in a few years, so we really like the snow, but we'd like to have a choice to visit it as opposed to have it descend upon us, I guess.
Exactly.
Is the philosophy now.
Yeah. So does Tavira have a large expat community? I think on the whole, the Algarve does. And tell our audience about the expat community amongst Tavira and the Algarve. And was that one of the reasons why you chose that area of Portugal because also of the expat community?
Yes, I think the large expat community was a contributing factor to choosing the Algarve besides the weather and the beaches. We arrived in Tavira in early October. We hosted a Thanksgiving meal here in our home with six other American expats. We attended Christmas dinner at the home of friends with a total of eight expats. We attended a New Year's Eve celebration with 17 expats. So our community is growing slowly but surely. In our own neighborhood, our next door neighbors on either side of us are Portuguese, but across the street we have a Belgian couple, we have two British couples, another Portuguese, French, Tanzanian, what else?
That's about it on this block, yeah.
Right, and another British couple around the corner, and French behind us. So a very eclectic neighborhood.
And the 17 of us at New Year's Eve were from a number of different countries, including Czechia, Prague, Great Britain, U.S., of course, a few.
Ireland.
Ireland, right. And where were Sanjay and, you know, anyway, it was a much wider expat community. And, you know, this brings up one of the other major reasons for choosing Portugal is the visa application, the visa process, and the cost of getting here, basically, of moving and relocating is much less expensive and much easier than many of the other places that we consider. For example, New Zealand is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful place. Number one, it's really, really far away from everything. And number two, it's extraordinarily expensive to...
It's tough to get in, too.
Yes, to become a resident.
A resident.
I mean, there is an expensive version of a visa in Portugal called the Golden Visa, which can cost anywhere between 350 and 500,000 euros. And if you have that kind of money and you want the flexibility that a Golden Visa affords, that's, you know, easy to get as well, relatively speaking. We went the retirees visa, the D7 route, which is very inexpensive in the long run and pretty easy, you know, as long as you follow the dictates of what they require and present everything in an orderly fashion. It's just a matter of then waiting for everything to be approved.
I think the Golden Visa in Portugal got so popular that they eliminated the most popular areas such as Porto, Lisbon, and the Algarve.
Parts of the Algarve, yes.
Yeah. Parts are open.
Yeah,
the less populated.
Exactly. They're trying to funnel people who are looking to live in the country to the less populated areas, including places away from the ocean in the Algarve, because there's a bit of land north of the most populated right along the ocean. Yep.
It seems like Portugal is a country that wants you to come.
Yes.
Whereas other countries are like, we'll tax you. And you'll pay, but Portugal is you know, as far as I think they want people to come to their country.
Yep.
So they tell just, I'm sorry.
They just, as of October 1st, implemented a new visa for digital nomads, the D8.
It's another popular
right.
one.
Right.
So would you, do all of your friends speak English, including, do you have many Portuguese people that are friends also?
Many, I would say, just to say hello to, you know, we speak to our neighbors, and mostly the conversations end up being in English because we're just learning the language. But, you know, we find if we greet our neighbors or greet a shop owner in Portuguese and then ask if they speak English, the response is usually a little, and then they proceed to have a
great conversation in English.
Conversation
yeah.
in English.
Yes.
They speak
yeah.
better English than
some Americans.
Right.
So yeah. So okay. So do you find you don't find the language a barrier at this point? So do you find that most people do speak English in the Algarve?
Yes.
Okay.
The one exception I would say is the telephone. We get calls from the post office because we have deliveries scheduled. And when we're speaking on the phone, we, you know, everyone, when we answer, starts speaking in Portuguese, and we have to interrupt and say, do you speak English? And sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't, and say, a colleague will call you, you know, so they hang up, and later we get a call from someone who does.
So okay. So it works.
Yeah, I would say 80% of the population does speak English in the Algarve.
That's pretty good. Just out of curiosity, are you taking any courses, immersive courses?
Yes, we have signed up for a language course. It's computer-based and work as you can or will.
I like that.
Excuse me. Over the course of the past couple of months since we moved into our new home, we've kind of been occupied.
I call it sidetracked.
Sidetracked.
Yeah, that's a good, Rich, that's a good word.
Getting the house in shape. So we're having some work okay. done, both inside okay. and out. And so the language is sort of taking a back seat at the moment, but we will get back to it.
One of the biggest challenges of the language is the pronunciation. You probably know this. And the course that we enrolled in has four major blocks, and the first entire block is pronunciation. And it's been immensely helpful. So I can go to, for example, DEEPL, DEEPL is a translation app, and, you know, put in an English word or phrase and know how to pronounce it, which is, you know, half the game or more. Yeah. But as I said in my bio, knowing how to pronounce it then, you know, gets you in trouble because they think you do speak Portuguese, and, you know, you have to then temper their expectations significantly. And the two major phrases that have to be used are falar inglês, which is do you speak English, and estou a aprender português, which is I'm just learning Portuguese. So those are very helpful. And the fact that not only can we say it properly, but that we are studying Portuguese really carries a lot of weight with people because they respect the fact that you're not coming here with an imperial attitude and expecting people to speak English. You're really asking for their help and their cooperation and, you know, a communal kind of, let's work this together. And, you know, we'll speak in a while, but, you know, we're trying.
You're more, I think people like to think of themselves as immigrants as opposed to expats.
Yeah.
And the immigrants, yeah. you know, you try to live in a society, you're living in a different country. You try to assimilate to their customs and their language, and you do your best. And yeah. I'm sure if they notice that, they're going to appreciate that as well.
They do. They really do.
Okay, so would you say that Tavira is more laid back than Porto and Lisbon?
Well, it's smaller. I mean, it's significantly smaller. Lisbon and Porto are real, honest-to-goodness cities. And Tavira, and pretty much every place in the Algarve, is a town, and Faro is sort of betwixt and between. It's got the international airport, and a lot of businesses are centered there. But yeah, I would say laid back, comfortable, relaxed, entertaining. Yeah, I don't know.
Definitely, that can be an issue with people coming from other countries not used to having a three-hour break in the middle of the afternoon.
Right.
Because, you know, lunch is from 12 to 3.
Business That's a good closed. Point.
Business is closed for several hours, usually from 1 to 4, possibly. And then they open again in the evening. So if you're looking for something in the afternoon at a specialty store, it may be closed. The post office is closed for lunch. So it's a different kind of lifestyle than what we're used to. But you get used to it. And then the other thing is, as far as, for instance, we're having work done on our home, and the workers here are very laid back, so to speak, because it takes probably longer to get a job finished. But the work is, you know, quality, and they do take pride in their work. It just, you know, is not immediate like it would be probably in the States. So.
And the cost overall is less, to be sure. I mean, for everything, but certainly for tradesmen and contractors as well. And, you know, the large businesses, for example, the supermarkets and the Leroy Merlin, the Home Depot type store, they're open continuously. They don't close down. They stagger their employees, you know, lunch breaks, so that they can continue to operate all day. And businesses in general that do close for lunch, the hours really vary. You really have to look it up on the internet or, you know, literally check their doors, because frequently it's only an hour and a half within that, you know, perhaps 1 to 4 or 12 to 3 or, you know, whatever area. They won't be closed that whole time necessarily.
So they're pretty much on Spain's schedule.
I guess, yeah, yeah.
With siesta.
Yep. Yeah, and the tradesmen, you know, if they come at 9, come 12 or 12:30, see ya, and they'll come back in an hour and a half or 2 hours, and then they'll continue. But they're very rigorous about taking their breaks, and that's a great thing.
Oh, yeah. I'm for that.
Yeah.
I'd be for a little siesta in the midday here at my job.
Right.
I don't think that'll work, though, with people calling up constantly.
Right. Right.
So is living in an LGBTQ community important to you guys? Is there such thing in the Algarve? Is there a concentration of like a gayborhood that like there is in the US, or is it just not even needed or not even thought about because of the culture?
In this part of the Algarve, I am not aware of any gayborhood. Probably in the bigger cities, Porto and Lisbon. Perhaps, to my knowledge, there's no gay bar in Tavira.
Not that I know of. No.
We have plenty of gay friends. The 8 of us at Christmas dinner, 7 were gay men. And the one woman, female friend who was there, I asked her if there was a gay community in Tavira. And she said, all of Tavira is gay.
That's pretty funny.
So.
Okay, there you go. So you don't miss the community or the bars?
We never were really into the bar scene. So being on the
For Jersey you, it Shore. Doesn't matter. Yep. Gotcha.
Yeah, on the Jersey Shore, we had Asbury Park. Seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Asbury Park almost exists because of the gay population who came in and, you know, rejuvenated and brought it back from pretty much of an abyss.
Right, yeah.
And we developed a whole bunch of friends who we keep in touch with from here. But that was pretty much the extent other than New York City itself in back home. And here, it's just everybody's very comfortable. It's just really terrific.
So it really doesn't matter.
It really doesn't.
You don't find any people, you know, discriminating against the LGBTQ community at all?
No, we talked about that at, I guess, Christmas dinner. And Ingrid, our friend, who wasn't one of the 7 gay men, and all of the gay men talked about the fact that none of us have ever felt anything untoward on the streets or in personal interactions, no feeling of danger or threat or it's just really human. You know, you can walk at night on a very dark street and not have to look over your shoulder. Although being relatively recent transplants, very recent, there is an instinct to do that.
Right.
But, you know, time and time again, not seeing any hint of anything untoward. I'm hoping and assuming that that instinct will evaporate.
Yeah, that's like me coming from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. I look over my shoulder all the time, or just like, you know, who's in back of me?
Exactly.
But that's very comforting. It's very comforting to know. Tell us about the local economy. What's the economy like? Can you provide examples to the audience, such as housing costs, either rental or purchasing, your electric bills, water bills, gas bills, taxes, stuff like that?
The economy in the Algarve is tourist driven. So there are busy times of the year and quiet times of the year. Here in Tavira, the quiet time begins in early October. The busy times are July, August, and September. Other parts of the Algarve are busier during the off season. We visited friends in, which is 20 kilometers west of us, and on a Saturday evening, the town was packed.
Really?
The restaurants were packed. So, you know, within a 15-minute drive, totally different scene. The overall cost of living is much less than in the U.S. We provide a spreadsheet of our budget to our financial advisor when we speak with him probably three times a year. And the last time we compiled it, we felt that the cost of living here was probably 40% of what we were spending in the U.S. Housing and rents are two areas that are not cheap, unfortunately. Cheaper than the U.S., for sure, but because of a lack of inventory and because of so many people coming here on visas looking for rental properties, and especially now with the digital nomad visa, those people looking for rental properties also, real estate can be an issue. There are a lot of properties for rent, but most of them are short-term rentals, holiday rentals. Landlords can make more money renting for a month or 6 weeks, you know, 3 months out of the year than they can renting for a 12-month lease. So,
did you rent or buy? Both.
Story. So when we applied for our visa, our D7 retiree visas, one of the requirements is a signed 12-month lease on a property.
Or a deed.
Or a deed to a property.
Right.
We signed a 3-year lease on a beautiful villa in Quartera, which is in the central Algarve near Elmora, a big resort area, golf courses galore, basically because we couldn't find a property near Tavira in our price range. We rented for 3 months without even living in the property as our visa was being processed. When we arrived on September 1st and moved into the villa in Quartera, within a week, we saw an ad for a property for sale in Tavira. We visited it three times over the next 3 or 4 days and made an offer on it. It was accepted, and within 3 weeks, we had closed on a townhouse in Tavira. So we are.
Did you get out of your lease? Out of your 3-year lease?
Yes.
We lost our deposit, which was 2 months, which we just considered a cost of investment. Yep. This was an offer we truly couldn't afford to lose.
Couldn't refuse. Yeah.
Couldn't refuse. Thank you. And the price had, the day we saw the ad, which came from one of the several realtors who, you know, was sending us ads for properties for sale and rent, the price had just been reduced by about 20%, which was pretty significant. And when we came to see the place, we said, whoa. And, you know, the rest is history. Going back to the rental, though, even that was pretty expensive in Quartera. And after we had signed everything, the realtor, who has since become a friend of ours, I said, so if we had done this like a year or two ago, She said, yeah, it would have been about half. So prices have really gone up. And, you know, that's not the case everywhere, and it's certainly not the case with every property, but it definitely is on an upward rise.
Yeah, between the visas, and it's a lot of hype. I mean, everywhere, yes. Every magazine you look at, Portugal, number one.
Yep.
Portugal, number one.
Yep.
And, you know, there has to be reasons for that as well, but that has driven prices up substantially.
Yeah.
Yep. And yeah, it's even come to the point, I think it's starting to price out the locals as far as in different cities.
Yeah.
As well, like in Lisbon.
Especially,
yeah.
There's been some pushback from the locals, especially towards digital nomad visa.
What are some of your bills like? Your electric bill, if you have a water bill, or your telephone bills, or stuff like that?
We have an all-electric house. So our electric bill is 100. Last month was €154. Our water bill is between 25 and 30 euros. Our cable bill is 43 euros. Our cell phone plan for the two of us is
50
euros.
Under 50, yeah.
Under 50.
Yeah. And note that the cable is including internet and a landline. You know, it's the triple play that you typically get in the U.S. for under $50. Which is pretty amazing.
Everything you just mentioned is almost, if not half of what I'm paying.
Yes.
Our homeowner's insurance for the year is
about
570 euros.
Yeah.
And that's because we opted for earthquake coverage.
Oh, do they have earthquakes?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
There was a major, major, major earthquake in the 1500s. Which really did tremendous damage to Lisbon and the Algarve. And there are tremors every so often, but not anything to worry about. It does not feel like California, for example, but it's recommended that you take seismic coverage because we are in a certain risk here, more than New Jersey, to be sure.
Yeah, right. Just out of curiosity, the earthquake insurance, how much did that add to your house insurance? Do you know?
15% to 20%.
I think.
Yeah.
Because you're still paying, you said you're paying 500 with both. I just got my insurance condo, only 1,700 square feet. I mean, it's decent size. If I pay it in installments, it was 1,100.
Right.
If I pay it outright, it comes out to like nine and change.
Right.
So still, for my condo insurance, I'm paying that much more than you guys.
Right. And annual taxes, we haven't come across it yet. Actually, we did, I guess, when we closed. And we're expecting about $400 a year. Euros, excuse me. I keep saying dollars.
400. Could I ask how many square meters or square feet?
200 square meters, which is about 2,100 square feet.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm paying, how much how much in taxes?
About 400 a year.
Compared to my 2,800 a year.
In New Jersey,
it's a big difference.
Mark, we were paying
8,000. Yeah, I could believe it because I lived in Connecticut too.
Square feet condo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just
we were paying
up,
something like 7,000.
Yeah.
And it just went up 2,000 before we moved. So
unbelievable.
Yeah.
So
and our car insurance is 360 for the year.
It's also pretty good. Yeah. So I'm kind of learning throughout a few different countries. You might be paying especially in Europe, you might be paying more in taxes because it's more socialized and you will get into the healthcare and stuff like that, but you're paying into something that you're getting back, but the cost of living and everything else is a lot cheaper than in the US. So it kind of balances itself.
There's an IVA tax, which is basically the tax on everything you purchase or services.
Right.
And there are three levels. The lowest is 6%, which is very rare. And I think what's 13%? And 23%, which is pretty much on almost everything. So 23% tax on purchases and services is pretty hefty.
Yeah.
But one of the good things is, for example, when we shopped for our car, the price that was quoted us included that tax. So it wasn't a surprise, which I think is exactly the opposite of anything happening in the States.
Yeah.
You know, where you'll say the car is $25,000. Oh, and by the way, there's another $7,000.
Taxes and service charges.
Right.
Right.
Right. So, you know, at least we knew right up front that's what it costs. And we didn't realize that at the time until it was broken down on the invoice. And they said, oh, well, that's great. That's the price we're paying. And one of the great things, I think it's in Portugal or is it European? There's the non-habitual residence exemption, NHR, which when you qualify for it, once you become a resident, which we hope to be in mid to late March, you have an exemption for 10 years from, I think it's the annual taxes. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Randy's the expert. I'm just referring to him. But so, you know, that also is a huge, you know, bonus.
Oh, yeah.
For expats arriving or immigrants, and, as you want to call them. Yeah.
See, that's one of the pieces that is enticing to move to a place like Portugal, because
yes.
I don't think other countries have that, like such as Spain. So
right.
You'd be paying a lot more in those countries than you are in Portugal.
Right. Interestingly, the real estate emails we get, some of them include nearby Spain. Ayamonte and Huelva are right over the border of the river separating the two countries. And real estate is significantly lower in those areas. I mean, really significantly.
It's the taxes.
No, the real estate cost itself.
Okay.
Yeah, the price of the properties. They're always like 100 to 150,000 less than what we see quoted for the Algarve properties that are listed.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Interesting.
It is.
So, okay. It's a great example of cost of living, so substantially yeah. cheaper. What about the arts and culture scene? Does Tavira or the Algarve have such a thing? And I know you're such a arts and you're both arts and culture people. So tell us about that. Do you miss that? I know you're not going to find a Broadway, but tell us a little bit about that.
That's the one area that we're still trying to research and delve into more. There's a lot of entertainment in Tavira particularly, but all over the Algarve in the form of concerts. We went to two concerts of the Jazz Orchestra of the Algarve, which is a pretty sharp outfit. And they were seasonal, you know, Christmas themed, but a lot of music that was not Christmas music, Ella Fitzgerald and Duke Ellington and, you know, that ilk, with an orchestra that was four trumpets, four trombones, five saxes, drums, piano, and bass, upright bass, and a vocalist. And it was held in a performing arts facility that held about 300 people, I'd say, and it was pretty full. And it was a beautiful, modern facility, and we're told that pretty much every town in the Algarve has something similar. In Tavira, there's the old market, the old Mercado, that is sort of semi-outdoor almost. I mean, it's very airy and light. And they have a stage set up there pretty constantly, and they have acts brought in there. Similarly, you know, soloist singers, small combos. A lot of churches have music. We haven't been to them, either the churches or the music. But what we haven't found yet is live theater. Nice. There is some definitely in Lisbon, but that's about 2.5 hours by car and more by public transportation. And I'm sure there's some in Porto. And we're not sure of that, how much is in English. And at the moment, that's important for us.
Do you miss it?
And yeah, go ahead.
Do you miss it?
Not terribly. We have enough streaming on Netflix, Amazon, you know, and the like, that although it certainly isn't the same as live performance, we at least get our, you know, cultural diet.
Right.
HD.
Right. Right.
PBS. And we're close enough here that we can be in London in just over 2 hours.
And we were.
So the 10 days we spent in London in early December, we saw 5 shows while we were there. And we spent 2 days in Cardiff where we saw another show.
So, you got your fix. Yes.
We did. We did. And it's there for the taking. And it's terrifically wonderful quality and a lot of very recognizable titles and some that aren't. And that's the beauty of an arts center, you know, a city that has a vibrant arts community, theater.
And airfares are very inexpensive. When we were looking back in October, a round trip fare from Faro to Gatwick was 38 euros round trip.
You can't beat that.
No.
On Ryanair or EasyJet.
That's great. And then I'm sure, how long does it take to get there? An hour and
a half?
Or two and a half? Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Very doable.
How about food? I love food. Are you guys foodies too? Or does the Algarve or Tavira have excellent restaurants? Are they, what type of restaurants? Are they just Portuguese or are they international? Can you get pretty much anything?
You name it, we can find it. Seriously.
Even Mexican?
Even Mexican. Absolutely. Wow. Mexican. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Our friends down the road, who I refer to several times, they've introduced us to, I'd say, about a dozen places, from sushi to Indian to Portuguese to
French.
It's a very international restaurant scene, totally international restaurant scene. And the Portuguese food, of course, is centered on fish, but definitely, you know, goes into the beef and the pork and the chicken, lots and lots of chicken, like every place. Mm. And pastas, Italian places, pizza. We found a couple of places that are okay. I'm Italian, I'm a little demanding, but they'll do for now.
You have that Bronx, Brooklyn.
Right.
I think we're going to an Irish bar for dinner.
Okay, so there's certainly, it sounds like there's no lack of cuisine.
No, not in the least.
That's a very good thing.
One of the additions to our diet is octopus. And
love octopus.
Well, good. My experience was, and I keep forgetting what it is.
Calamari
in the U.S. Yeah. And, you know, it was definitely hit or miss because if the chef really didn't know what he was doing, you end up, you know, with a rubber band in your mouth.
Yes.
But we've had several meals involving octopus, and it's just succulent and tasty and tender and just the best. And, you know, this is where it is. And it's very exciting to have, you know, an expansion of your experience with cuisine and with specific foods like that.
And mostly expensive. We were in Villarreal de Santo Antonio last Saturday evening. We went out to dinner at a local Portuguese restaurant. Rich had a whole sea bass, and I had a rib dinner with a salad, vegetables, bread, cheese, olives. He had a beer. I had a large glass of wine. And the total bill was 33 euros.
So, oh, my Lord.
Yeah. Now, that came with one thing. I had to work very hard at the fish because they don't debone the fish. That's a skill that we now have developed.
So they don't do filet?
You can buy frozen filets at the store, and probably if you ask the fishmonger nicely at one of the supermarkets, they'll probably filet it. They'll certainly cut the head and tail off, which was not the case with my meal the other night. It was served with head and with tail, but, you know, sliced in the middle and flapped open. But
$30 compared to two people is definitely over $100 here in the U.S.
Probably.
So, with wine and beer and dessert and all that stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so friendly and so, you know, nice atmosphere. And a simple place. I mean, this was like, you know, just one of 6 or 7 on this strand right opposite the marina.
Do they do the menu del dia, the menu of the day?
Yes.
And it's something like, I don't know, it's 8 to 12 euro, and you get like a 3-course meal, You get
like an early bird special.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I think it's lunchtime actually.
Yes. Yes.
Do they have that as well? Because they have that in Spain too.
Yeah. Some places. But, you know, basically, like most places, you go to lunch and you can get pretty much what's available for dinner at less cost. And the portion might be a little bit smaller, but frequently not.
Do they do paella in Portugal?
Well, it's a Spanish dish, but yes, right. It's available in different places.
Okay. Yeah. I was just kind of curious about that, if that's available in Portugal. Okay, so the food scene seems excellent. Tell us about the wine. How good is the wine? How inexpensive is the wine?
The wine is very good for the most part. We especially like the reds from the Douro region in the north. And I found a shipper that ships by the case. And I've ordered two cases since we arrived in October, and they've both been under 50 euros a case. So
wow. That goes to show you. It's so
I think there was one bottle in all of those that we said, not so much. But that's pretty good. And that's reds and whites, mostly reds. And, you know, at the restaurant, a glass of wine is like 3 euros, maybe. You know, house wine. And the house wine is usually very good. I mean,
it's
we're not
pretty
connoisseurs.
Because it's grown.
Yeah.
It's grown in Porto or, you know, in Portugal. So,
yeah. And we were gifted with a couple of really nice bottles of port by a couple of friends. And we enjoy that here every so often.
Yeah.
And the beer is good. Sacresh and Superbach. And
well, you sometimes drink vodka or gin drinks.
Right.
And what's...
So bottles of wine can be purchased for, you know, 1 or 2 euros even at the grocery store. So,
wow. How about hard liquor like vodka or gin?
It's also available at the grocery store.
Inexpensive?
15 to 20 euros
okay.
for a bottle.
Okay. I can deal with that as well. So tell us about... Is there any public transportation in the Algarve? If you wanted to take a bus, is there a bus? Is there a train? I know there is an international airport in Faro, but tell us about that. I guess most people do need cars to get around. And you talked about the walkability, so there is walkability. But is there traffic at all?
Not having been here in the summer, we can't speak to the traffic in the summertime. During the fall and winter so far, there has been very light traffic. There are two major roads through the Algarve. One is a toll road, and it is four-lane divided and very little traveled, mostly because the locals refuse to pay tolls. So you can get on the toll road and do 130 or 140 kilometers an hour and just zip along.
There's no speed limit?
Speed limit's 120.
Speed limit is 120. The other local highway is the 125 and it runs...
Is that miles per hour or kilometers?
Oh, that's kilometers. Oh, yeah.
And what does that equal
to? Yeah, it's about 62, okay. 70. 120 is about 70, yeah.
Okay.
The other... local highway is the 125 that runs from the east to the west in both directions. And it is heavily traveled by the locals, but never backed up that we've experienced.
The only backup is following a horse or donkey-drawn cart, which happens.
Lots of roundabouts. So be aware that the local roads are filled with roundabouts, but very few traffic lights. So no stop and go. So yeah, traffic moves. There is bus service from most of the towns in the Algarve to Lisbon via Faro. I think the buses go to Faro and then from Faro you can get an express bus to Lisbon or north. There's a local train that runs from the Spanish border across the Algarve. It stops in Tavira and it also has a connection in Faro up to Lisbon on a high speed or faster train. And then in Lisbon, you can catch a high-speed train to the rest of Europe.
So excellent.
Also a local bus that just does the Tavira area.
And senior citizen rates are crazy, ridiculously low.
Give us an example for a bus or
I can't because we haven't used it, but
okay.
Our friends who have tell us it's just like, you know, a euro or two.
Wow.
And you're there.
Speaking of driving, how did you get a driver's license? What did they make you go through to get one?
We still have our U.S. licenses. We have not received our resident cards yet. Our appointments with immigration are scheduled for the middle of March, even though our visas were issued in mid-August. The immigration service is fairly backed up because of Brits from Ukrainians from the war, and so many people applying for visas, long-term visas.
And COVID. Sure.
Yeah.
So once we have our resident cards in March, we can apply for or turn in our U.S. licenses for a Portuguese license.
And basically all it requires is a physical, am I correct?
And paperwork,
right. We have to have...
There's an application. Right. When we left the States, we had to have a copy of our driver's record from New Jersey, notarized and apostilled.
Yeah.
And then have that sent to the consulate in Newark, which is where we applied, and they approved it there. So we have all that paperwork. Once we have a resident card and the application form, it'll be uploaded to it's called the IMT, is the DMV of Portugal.
Equivalent.
And once the paperwork is uploaded, we should be granted a license within a few weeks.
So no driving test?
No.
As
long as our license is valid, our current
just for that alone, it's probably worth go to Portugal.
Right.
Because other countries make you go through their driving test in their language. Right. So
that's a big difference. If you wait until your license is expired, it becomes more complicated. But as long as your license is valid, you're in good shape.
That's a big plus.
And they changed the regulations last year. So if you're under 60, you don't have to exchange your license for a Portuguese license. You can use your current license until it expires.
Right.
I must admit, I don't fall into that category anymore.
None of us.
Don't tell anybody.
Right.
Okay. So no traffic. Oh, here's another thing. So you mentioned it gets less populated in the winter months, in the fall and the winter. Do places close down also?
Yes.
They do? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, restaurants too?
Yes.
Yes. Some of the restaurants close for several weeks. Interestingly, some of the restaurants in town open during the winter season because during the summer they have facilities on the beaches or close to the shore. So in the off season, those facilities close and the ones in town open. So, but yes, the restaurants do close down. A lot of them do close down, but a lot of them are open year round.
There's not a paucity of choices even in the off season. I mean, mostly we have to have reservations.
Yeah.
To make sure. We tend to eat earlier than the Portuguese, which like the Spanish, you know, they tend to eat 7:30, 8 o'clock. We tend to eat at 5:36, 6:30.
Yeah, you're like
and
me.
And it's a lot easier to find, you know, tables for the places that are open. But,
yeah. They would call it an early bird special.
They would.
It kind of is now reminding me sort of like a Provincetown, Massachusetts type. Not the gay factor at all, but the, you know, just being on the water, kind of wintry, kind of closes a lot of places, close up, very community oriented and open. It kind of brings that thought to mind.
Very much like our Jersey Shore existence as well, because we were on a barrier island and we did not envy anybody who owned a business of any kind, restaurant or otherwise, who basically had to close once Labor Day came around. And if they were really brave, they would last it through the end of September. And then they have like 8 months before, you know, they'll have any kind of audience to help them survive. And it's much less severe here because, as Randy said, it seems like they only close for a few weeks or maybe even just a couple of months. And, you know, that's to do work to reinvigorate the facility as well as the people and give them time off. So I don't think it's as drastic as Provincetown or the Jersey Shore, where it's pretty, you know, pretty...
Yeah, seasonal.
Quiet is, I guess, the euphemism.
Right, right. So they take a longer siesta there.
Right, there you go. There you go.
Okay. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the crime or lack of. Is there any crime, so to speak, is... Would it be just petty crime? I know that you don't allow guns in Portugal.
Only people do hunt, but they use them for hunting.
For hunting, and not for killing people.
Right.
But tell us a little bit about the crime in your area.
We're not aware of any crime in our area. I mean, we haven't been aware of any crime in our area. We're told that in the Algarve, most of the crime is crime of opportunity. So things left in locked cars or belongings left with, you know, with it, where someone could easily pick it up or take it.
Their keys to the door.
Unattended items.
Right.
You know, we have run into a few homeless. We have run into buskers playing musical instruments and, you know, asking for money. But as far as crime, we're not aware of any so far. Not
We've talked earlier about, you know, feeling incredibly safe, even very, very late at night or very, very early in the morning. Right. On dark streets. And we certainly are aware that the cities, the Lisbons and the Portos, one of the big advisories that were shared with us when we were first here in 2019 was really beware of the pickpockets in the large cities.
Yes.
And undoubtedly there's crime, but it's not headline blaring every day or even every week. And in the Algarve, we read the local papers, and I haven't seen much, if anything. I honestly don't remember seeing any.
How refreshing is that?
Oh, well, when people ask why we moved here, the short answer is safety and sanity. And it's certainly lived up to that, and we couldn't be happier.
Yeah, one of the major reasons for looking, at least looking elsewhere, is the mass shootings. After Uvalde, Texas, you know, my husband and I spoke and said, you know, this is not going to stop. It's impossible. You can't take guns away from everybody.
Right.
So it's never going to improve. So
the horse is out of the barn and it's breeding like rabbits. And I can't imagine what it would take to reverse it, because there is a lack of civility and a lack of respect and a lack of community in the U.S. in the sense of me first, right. What I need, what I want. And that was really infecting even our local 600 community, you know, population. Money speaks and I'll do what I damn please. And here it's pretty much the opposite. We live in a home that if you were on the street, you would assume it's all condominiums, but it's not. We own our individual home and there's no HOA. People could conceivably do anything they want to the exterior of their building, not to mention the interior, but it's an incredibly harmonious architectural community. Basically, the homes are white outside, with many of them have yellow highlight. The doors are different colors, but there's a respect for, you know, fitting in with perhaps a little bit of individuality, as opposed to making a blaring statement like, you know, I'm special and right. You know, watch me.
Look at me.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, those are huge, huge differences in just the mentality, the way of living, the way of sharing, the way of being considerate and part of a community as opposed to a community of one.
Yeah, it's a whole different culture.
It is.
Speaking of culture, do you have any culture shock? Like, is there something that you really miss in the U.S.?
Just as we said, the theater, but, you know, again, London is our go-to now, and there are movie theaters. One of the big things in Portugal, which is different from Spain, in Portugal, when you go to a movie, if it's in English, they will play the English track as the original and subtitle it.
I like that.
In Spain, they dub it. And we've been told that people in Portugal are more literate in English because of that. Because the Spanish, by and large, don't hear the English when they watch TV or go to a movie.
Right.
And it's helpful to us to see the subtitles in Portuguese while the English track is running.
I like that.
Yeah.
I do.
Very much. Very much. It's really smart. You know, there are some upheavals in the government at the moment. There are some scandals. There's some embezzling. There's people quitting. And, you know, there are bureaucracy that can drive a sane person insane. But, you know, part of it is that we're retired. And one of my catchphrases, if you will, is I'm retired. I have all the time in the world. And yep. So far, we haven't encountered anything that's so urgent that having to call back 5 or 6 or 10 times or wait for an hour or two is an obstacle. You know, we'd certainly rather it weren't that way, but, you know, patience goes a long way and, you know, it lowers the blood pressure and,
you know, it's
good for so many things.
Something that we have to look out for.
Yes.
Over that 60 mark.
Yes.
So tell us about the healthcare. What's the healthcare like? Tell us about the private insurance and healthcare versus the public system. Are there long waits for the public? And what are you both on? Are you on public, private, or both?
There is a public health service. We have both been granted access to the public health service. We have our UTANT numbers, the public health service numbers, but the system is probably overburdened because of COVID and I think a lack of doctors, especially in the Algarve. So there can be long waits. On the other hand, a friend was taken to the emergency room and spent the night in the hospital. Had 2 days of tests, and when he was discharged, his bill was nothing. So it is affordable. Private health insurance is one of the requirements of the residency visa. So Rich and I have applied for private health insurance because of our ages. There was only one company that we could get insurance through, and our monthly premium for both of us is 219 euros a month.
It's pretty reasonable.
And very reasonable. That's the lowest level. There are, you know, higher degrees of coverage that would cost, you know, 150 or more euros a month. But we're blessed with good health overall, and we feel that the balance between paying a higher premium versus what it would cost in a hospital or, you know, any other doctor's office situation makes us feel very comfortable. We have friends who live in Nol, which is, Randy mentioned, about 15 kilometers, about 30 minutes away. And they chose not to have any private coverage at all. And the wife had a medical situation that she had to have attended to. And what did he say? The whole thing cost 600 euros without any kind of insurance. And it was a lot of tests and several doctors, which would cost many, many thousands of dollars in the U.S. Many.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, even without insurance, it was just amazingly affordable and competent care. And of course, like any place, not every doctor is going to be competent. And the insurance allows second opinions, which is always helpful. But yeah, we, you know, we'll obviously continue to hope and work towards our good health. But it was a major, major factor in deciding on Portugal in terms of moving here, that the healthcare is affordable and it's very good. Very good.
So having private insurance, does that enable you to see private doctors faster than on the public system?
We're led to believe that, yes. In private hospitals, the closest I think is in Faro.
Okay.
The prevailing word is that more access to doctors who speak English enough that you can, you know, really feel comfortable that you're understanding and that they're understanding you.
That's really important too.
It is. And not necessarily the case with the public health insurance, but again, with the people who we encountered who have had public health care, they've been able to communicate with their doctors and nurses very well. So, you know,
Excellent. It's
an individual.
That makes a big difference because, you know, in an emergency, you need to know what's going on. You need to know what they're doing. And if nobody speaks English, that could be a problem. You would need to bring an interpreter with you.
Right, right. Exactly.
Okay. So do you wish, besides the theater, because we went over that, do you wish that you had anything else that you don't currently have in Tavira?
Really good bagels and really good pizza.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to ship some to you.
Oh, angel hair pasta.
Oh, okay.
We really are partial to it. It's probably illogical and doesn't make much sense, but we really feel there's a difference in the experience. Angel hair versus, you know, any other grade of spaghetti.
Yeah.
There is an angel hair on sale at the supermarkets, but it's sort of braided. And it's intended for a totally different preparation than you would consider for pasta in an Italian, you know, mode. And we tried to use it with pasta sauce, and it ended up being just mush.
You're gonna have to take a trip to Italy.
Well, we've extended invitations for people to come stay with us, and we have told those who are serious that there will be a list that you can choose from to bring things over. And angel hair pasta and bagels will be two of them.
Rich, there's nothing like a New York bagel.
Nothing. I think we were talking about that with somebody here, one of the British expats, one of our tradesmen, and it's the water.
It's the water.
That's
it's
both
the water,
bagels
it's
and
the
pizza.
The New York water.
That's right.
That they make, yep, bagels and pizza.
Yep.
So, yeah, with a little schmear, I can go for that right now.
They have the schmears.
They do?
They have Philadelphia cream cheese with herbs or salmon or, you know, whatever you want. But
they have the schmears without the bagel.
Well, we have the bagels.
They don't make it.
They're okay. I mean, you know, they satisfy an imagination of what it should be.
Yeah, I would imagine probably they're probably the same here in Phoenix. So, yeah. Nothing like New York.
But we do have pasta, what is it? The butter, the donata, the pastries.
Oh, pasteas donata.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
They're addictive.
Looks delicious.
You can get them everywhere there. You know, where, like, for example, New York City or any large city in the U.S. has coffee shops. Here, it's the pastelaria.
Wow.
And they are populated every hour of the day. And I don't think they close for lunch. Yeah. I think that is where people go at lunch for their breaks because they also serve, you know, lighter food as well.
And coffee and beer.
Yeah. And
it looks so good.
Yeah.
I wonder what it tastes like. It looks like
a little custard tart.
Or custard
tart. It's basically what it is, with a really flaky crust and filled with delicious custard and, you know, sort of like flame. Creme brulee, you know, type flame finish on the custard. And,
It looks yummy and sounds yummy.
Yep.
So a couple of things to tie up. Do you recommend hiring an attorney or to help with residency and taxes before and purchasing real estate before coming to Portugal or while in Portugal?
We did not use an attorney to apply for our visas. We joined a Facebook group called Americans and Friends PT. The admins of that group have done an extraordinary job outlining the processes and requirements for applying for a visa at any consulate in the United States. And other than the application fee and the costs of meeting those requirements, we did not need an attorney. When we purchased our home, we did use an attorney, and that is recommended.
Yeah.
Just to be sure there are no issues with the title, property title. We also had an attorney review the lease that we originally signed because it was in Portuguese, and we weren't familiar with the language or the legalese in Portugal. But otherwise...
Well, we hired Ariana from Portugarb Know-How to help us get... One of the requirements is having a Portuguese fiscal number called an NIF.
Yeah.
And we did that while we were in the States, actually before we went on our scouting trip back in February of last year. And Ariana, I think, am I remembering? I think, was very helpful. And it was just a relatively small fee, and she was able to accomplish getting that for us. And then we were also able to open a bank account in the country here while we were still in the States, which is not the easiest thing to do. You have to find the right person. And through this Americans and Friends PT, we found the right person in Newark, New Jersey. And we were able to get that out of the way very, very handily. As I said, the woman who helped us with our NAFs was, what, like 200, 110?
110.
Each?
No.
Oh, it was total? Okay. So, I mean, that's like a pittance. And Randy, you know, said it all, but you can't underappreciate the Americans and Friends PT. They have a host of files that you can access from their Facebook page that are so detailed and so accurate and kept up to date about just about everything you can think of about moving to Portugal. The D7 visa, of course, is a big one. How to bring a dog, driver's licenses, buying property, renting property, name the topic, and they probably have a most incredible file that if you read it and heed their advice and their methodology, you will be in great shape and you can do almost all of it yourself.
Yeah, I'm on that group. Yeah.
So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I've taken a look at that group as well.
Heidi and Susan are just incredible. And, you know, the discussions, you know, all the postings are... You have to, you know, it's caveat emptor to be sure, because everybody's talking from their personal experience and some people are talking through their hats.
Right.
But, you know, there's a lot of useful information in them as long as you then vet it, you know, with other sources.
Right. You
but,
have to fact
but
check.
The files are vetted to within an inch of their lives and they're just, yeah, you know, you understand.
That's great. Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely helpful. So, in wrapping up, what would you say to our audience if they're thinking about relocating to Tavira?
Do it. There's a major subset of people who would like to consider it, who are hampered, and I'm using that word not pejoratively, but I mean, you know, just literally, by having major family obligations at home. You know, kids.
Yeah,
elderly parents, you know, some kind of thing that really makes it difficult for them to just pick up and leave. And, you know, people who would say to us, oh, God, if I could, I would. And that was a frequent response when we told people we're just going.
Just do it like Nike.
Just do it. Yeah. But, you know, we can't dictate people's personal circumstances. And, you know, it's a major, major
decision.
New chapter in our lives. You know, we keep in touch with friends back home. And to be perfectly honest, a vast majority of them we just kept in touch with by phone or video or, you know, email when we were there. So, you know, the difference is 5 hours, time zones. There are certainly a not insignificant number of people who we really do miss seeing and hugging, but they have an open invitation to come visit us. We would love to see them here and, you know, say hi and make up on those hugs and all.
Oh, yeah. What's not to like about visiting Portugal or Europe, too?
So, exactly.
I expect that you're going to have quite a few visitors
We have one who actually has her reservations, literally, in terms of her itinerary. And we have several others who we know are going to follow through. All the rest, we'll keep encouraging them, but, you know, they've got to make the move.
Their own decision.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. And thank you, gentlemen, for your time. This was great. I learned about the Algarve in Tavira. It's a place that I'm really interested in. So thank you for joining the podcast and giving your time to us. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us. And if you make it to Tavira, you've got a place to stay.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're a great...
We'll take you up on that.
Please do.
Please do. Please do. Plenty of room.
And you're a great interviewer. It's so relaxed, and it feels just really wonderful to be in your hands.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. Thank you. And yeah, you're a great guest too. So yeah, until next time, we'll see you soon.
Great.
Take care.
Até a próxima. See, till next time.
Till next time.
See.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.